Hey guys, welcome back to the Longevity Podcast. My name is Lockie Ville. I'm going to be your host again. How lucky you guys to get to hear my sweet souping voice. Episode 55. Today, I have the privilege and honor to sit down and have a great conversation today with Mr. Shane Warne, also known as Shane Warne Fitness. Shane Warne is a personal trainer slash strength and conditioning coach slash online trainer here in the Gold Coast region of Australia. Extremely knowledgeable guy, an absolute savage on the mats. And today's conversation we have, I wanted to pick his brain and see, mainly primarily focusing on jiu-jitsu athletes and of course MMA athletes, but of course a lot of the information that we speak today can be correlated to an everyday person. We talk about sleep, we talk about nutrition, we talk about strength and conditioning and a whole range of different topics. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. If you would like to see more of Shane Warne's work, you can follow him on Instagram, which is Shane Warne Fitness, and I'll put that description in below. And of course, if you can always follow me, Coach Lockie Ville, you can search me up on Instagram. And of course, if this podcast today gives you any insight or any valuable information that you can apply directly straight after you've listened to this, please like and subscribe to it, and we'll see you on the next episode. Let's
1,000 calories for the large. Small one, 600 calories, uh-huh. $7.
What's it called?
Community Cuisine. Community Cuisine. They deliver every Tuesday. I go to Coco's after jiu-jitsu, train there in the afternoons. I take my food home. But it's like, it's super tasty, but super, super, super high in fat. And then there's another place in Southport called Samurai Muscle Meals, and they're basically super, almost fat free. Like they're just Japanese fried, just meat, rice, some veggies, and I just have them. I just save food. I just save time, man.
Dude, this is funny. I'm really glad you bought this. Do you want water too?
No, I'm good, man.
I'll give you some water too. Because this is my challenge at the moment is the time that it takes to cook food, dude,
is so much.
How much calories you're eating at the moment?
3,500, 4,000.
Gotcha. So how many meals is that? That's 4 or 5 meals.
It's hard, is what
it is.
Yeah, I don't have time. So that's the thing. Like, so I actually started doing it. Oh man, a year ago.
And what was the conclusion? What was the conclusion you've gone, I'm spending too much time?
Oh, just too much time.
Yeah.
Because, here's the thing, right? So I spend maybe $200 a week on food.
Mm.
And that's like lunch, dinner, you know, a couple of dinners, lunch, whatever, food. Bar breakfast, all my food.
Yeah.
For 6 days, probably. Man, if I was to make it myself, it probably cost me $100, maybe. So I save $100, but maybe what's that save me? Probably, 45 minutes a day?
45 minutes minimum, and that's not including doing the dishes.
Yeah, 45, because I was probably only really take, most days only take half an hour.
Okay.
Lunch, but then there's a food prep on Sunday. So yep. Even so, if I average that out, like, that's 4 or 5 hours. Like, I don't have time.
Mm.
I mean, I do have time, but my time's better spent doing other stuff.
Yeah, that's it.
And not only the time doing it, but the time thinking about it. Like, what am I going to cook?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever decisions I can take out of my head, I do. And that in itself is probably worth as much as the time saved. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Fucking Barack Obama. Famously, when he got into office as president, told his chef, these are my 4 favorite meals. Never ask me what I want to eat. Just give it to me. And then his, whatever the name is of the dude that looks after his clothing, he said, these are my favorite suits. Just put one out on my bed for me every day for me to get dressed. I just never want to have to think about this. Just making space in my brain for the important decisions. So I basically just pretend I'm the president of the United States.
Pretty much are, wouldn't you say?
That's great. Yeah. So you're saving averagely 45 minutes, and then how much... you said food would averagely be what?
Well, these ones cost $11.
Per meal?
Per meal.
How much?
They're about 500 calories, but the other ones are $7 and $11. They come in a small and large. I only get larges now.
Yeah, of course.
It's
full of cows.
Yeah, man. 1,000 calories, 1,100 calories. Oh, and they taste really nice too. Couple of them, one of them a day. Breakfast, 1,000 calories for breakfast.
Yep.
Some snacks, a smoothie. I make my own smoothie. Yeah. I make a smoothie every day. Fast. Just, it's fast, but it's also, you know, it's a really quick way to put this, to consume some of the stuff that I really want to have every day. You know what I mean? Because I'm not really necessarily getting the best ingredients from these guys. I'm not saying that they're bad, but I'm sure they're not going and getting organic fucking food, because it's not costing me, it's not costing me fucking $10, you know, if they're getting organic stuff. So I make my own smoothies with the broccoli sprouts and the fucking, whatever.
Benefits of the broccoli sprouts? Read a lot of papers recently. Broccoli sprouts seems to be probably one of the most superfoods as far as when it comes to greens.
Man, I can't even remember the reasons, because I've been having broccoli sprouts now since 2019. Broccoli sprouts is because of the sulforaphane in the broccoli sprouts. That's right. So. One of the big reasons is its anti-carcinogenic properties. Somehow, the sulforaphane helps your body get rid of heavy metals. Benzene and something else that, you know, you just get from the air, normally... it doesn't come out in your sweat. When you have broccoli sprouts, it does. So there's that. It's a massive anti-inflammatory, antioxidant. Decreases symptoms of autism. Somehow cleans kidneys. So many things, man. I can't remember.
So many things I'm going to pick your brain out.
I just can't even remember.
But yeah, I remember it was huge. I think I read the article I read up here, and I heard it on the Huberman podcast as well. Just talking about, the issue of...
Rhonda Patrick's the best place to go to
for
sulforaphane.
Is she?
She's where I got it from. She did work with Jed Fahey. Jed Fahey's basically the preeminent dude on broccoli sprouts. But she now doesn't do broccoli sprouts. She does moringa powder instead.
Moringa powder.
But I haven't done anything about moringa powder. I actually probably want to look into it.
Let's look it up right now. I'm already recording too.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, dude. Oh. This is literally how I do it.
All right.
I'm getting my camera fixed. So next time we do another one, we'll have it on video, put on YouTube. Moringa.
Yeah, what I don't know about the moringa is like how much to have, the dosage, that kind of stuff. Because I don't know if there's necessarily been studies done on it. There may be, but I'm basically waiting for Rhonda to give me the information I want.
How do you spell moringa?
I think it's MORINGA, I think.
There it is. Moringa benefits. Moringa powder used to protect tissue, liver, kidneys, hearts, and lungs, and
to reduce pain. Yeah, I believe it's got the same thing.
Seems like it.
Yeah. Same sulforaphane, but I'm not sure. I haven't done research into that because I know how much I want to have with the broccoli sprouts, so that's what I have, because I know what kind of dosage I want.
Sups range from even from $13 to up to $60. Okay. Is there any other ones you've been taking at the moment as far as like these superfood supplements?
No, man, the only thing I supplement with really now is zinc, fish oil, and
how much zinc you take?
15 milligrams twice a day.
Yep, 15. So yeah, 30. What sort of zinc is it? Because there's two. I mean, there's two.
I don't know.
There's one that's more bioavailable. I only found it the other day.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was more than... Oh, I probably did know there's more than one zinc, but I haven't looked into it. There's too many things to look into. I know.
Yeah.
There's
no mastery of this, right?
What's the...
Okay.
I'm trying to find the one that I had just not...
And you get your SOPs from iHerb?
Generally speaking,
iHerb.com.au. It's usually the best one, I think.
Yeah.
Best value for money as well.
It's generally the one I get. I like this Now brand.
Yeah.
Once again, I think I heard Rhonda talk about it once.
Really?
So yeah, from a quality standpoint, versus price.
Yep.
They did really well. There's some other ones like in Norway and stuff that are a little bit better from a quality perspective, but they're also 8 times the price. And you know,
because that's the real challenge with supplements, right? It's better
because I want them, yeah, and I also want them all,
of course.
And if I take all the supplements that I want, it's also going to cost me $500 a day.
Minimum.
I'm trying to find the one that I have, but I can't remember. Okay. I can't remember, but that's about it, man. That's all I really supplement with. Other than that, it's just be healthy,
okay,
exercise, get sun in the morning, you know, usual stuff.
Sun, big fan of the sun. How much are you doing the minimum 1 hour protocol? You just get as much as you can.
Man, my goal is 20 minutes a day. That's it. Because I try to balance, man. Like, I don't want too much sun because I don't want cancer, right?
Especially in summer. The summer's the issue, right?
Yeah, I just...
It's not too bad now, but for the next couple of months, it's going to be picking up as far as the UV.
I do my best to get sun in the morning. As a PT, it is difficult. So if I'm starting at 6, particularly during winter, well, the sun's not up yet.
So yeah, it's popping up at 6:42 now, but it's light, yeah, probably around 6, but still, like, you're in the gym though, right?
Yeah.
You're not seeing, because
one of the gyms is good for sun, the other one's not.
Good Life is not the one.
No, Good Life, there's no natural light at all.
No.
Man, it is an absolute head fuck. It was fine for probably 3 or 4 months, maybe. And then one day I just realized it was like 11 o'clock in the morning and I just thought it was 6 p.m. And I just, I'm like, what's going on? And I looked at the time, it's 11 o'clock. And then I come to realize that, you know, there's these instinctual things that the body does to track time over the day. And that's the change in light, movement of the sun, and none of that exists. And ever since I noticed it, it started messing with my head more and more and more.
Of course, you went deep on the rabbit hole in that.
Yeah.
Huh.
And, you know, once your mind's on it, then it's, it's stuck. Yeah. Whereas Coco's is different. Like, okay. Lots of open light. They're just garage doors, open the garage doors. Seems like
a good setup.
Yeah, man. It's Coco's is a cool ass gym. I mean, Good Life is really good for what it is too.
Yeah.
At Bundle, but Coco's is cool.
Okay.
It's a bit of a hit to the ego though, being a strength coach at Coco's and being the weakest person there. Because they're actual literal strong men. Really? So, and women. Yeah. So Well, it's not really a hit to the ego because I do jiu-jitsu. So my ego's always kept in check anyway. Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't have space to have an ego.
Where's Coco's gym?
In Mullandina.
Okay, this is about 15 minutes up from here.
It's probably about a 15-minute drive just straight up the highway. Get off Narang Southport Road and you're a few minutes away.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's a cool gym. It's really cool. There's loads of really, really cool equipment that most gyms don't have.
You've got a sled track, don't you?
There is definitely a sled track there, yeah. There's a sled track, there's space, there's belt squats, there's reverse hypers, there's pendulum squats now, there's a bunch of racks, there's safety bars, buffalo bars, stones, walls to throw stuff against, space outside to throw things in the air and do sprint. Like, it's just whatever I want's there. Mm. It's cool. It's a really cool gym. And really, really nice. Like, really nice people.
That's great. Well, I have a few questions that I came up with, but you've, from what I've seen, you're going to compete. It's the IBJF World Masters.
It's a possibility at the moment.
That's a possibility. But your intentions is there, right?
Yeah, yeah. Look, at the moment, I'd like to do it. Yeah. I'm going to make my mind. I basically set a target of Sunday, so in 2 days, so I'm going to make my mind up. It just comes down to cost, because I'm going to be gone. If I go, I'm probably only going to go for 5 weeks. So a week in Vegas, so like a few days before and a few days after the competition.
A bit of a holiday.
Well, no, not a holiday. I'm going to go to Florida for a month
okay.
and work at my mentor's gym. And just get experience and learn at his gym. So that's the plan. And the problem with that is, not a problem, but obviously that adds a lot of cost, but also not being here for that long is a cost in lost revenue as a PT.
Yeah, obviously. That's yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, I totally understand, because that is the challenge of being one place at one time, is if you're not here, the only other option is just getting other coaches onto you, right?
Yeah.
To a certain degree.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I can definitely do things about it. I mean, I do online coaching, so that'll happen, and I'll just convert some of the face-to-face people to online coaching. Yeah. So it'll supplement, but yeah, not the same. But it's just, it becomes an expensive trip, and additionally, I guess, I only thought about it for the first time a week ago.
Really?
So
what prompts you to for this sport?
Because
you've been picking up a little bit. I noticed, like, just even just with social media and even just with your clients, like, you're sort of picking up the pace a bit. What's kind of, like, driving you to
Man, honestly...
Push the roof of the what you believe is possible.
I don't believe there's a roof of possibility for anyone, first of all.
Great point.
The only roof that exists is the roof that we create for ourselves in our own heads. So there is a roof, but
for sure, but it's, yeah, but
it's self-built.
Yeah, self-built. Yeah.
The only reason I thought about it was just came up in conversation a week or so ago that Louise was going, and the main reason, that's right. So Louise is going, one of our training partners, and she's got some sponsorship, and I just thought, well, why don't I get sponsorship? Because I just couldn't, from a financial standpoint, couldn't do the trip I wanted to do. I thought, I'm just going to get some sponsorship to go. And that's the only reason, because it just came up in conversation. So I thought, well why can't I do that? So I've had a chat to a couple of local businesses, and it looks like I will get a bit of sponsorship. So that allows it to happen. So that's all that really happened.
Speaking outside the box a little bit.
Yeah, in relation to doing more, man, to be honest, I'm not really doing any more. I'm doing the same thing I always did. Of probably just being a bit more consistent from a social media perspective, at least, in relation to making content that is more specific for the people who actually want to train or do train. In relation to competition, man, honestly, I hate competition. The anxiety that I get through the whole competition, building up the day, everything, I hate every second of it. But I had to compete. Had to is probably not the right way to put it, but I train that many, from a strength and conditioning perspective, I train that many competitors that I felt to be the best coach that I can be, that I needed to do that. I could still be a very good coach. But I would be better if I did it, and because I'd understand what go. And there were some certain things that I did learn in the last couple of competitions that were going to help me from a programming perspective, from a strength and conditioning standpoint.
Of course.
But at the flip side, I don't know. I just feel if I'm training people that are competing, I need to, to a degree, sort of lead from the front. Not necessarily that I'm better.
Lead by example.
Yeah. Not that they need my example, but maybe I need to feel my own example to feel comfortable enough telling these people what they should be doing. You know, it's probably more so for me than for anyone else in that respect. But I just, to be the best I can be at my job. And my job is to make other people, well, there's a few parts to it, but one of them is to help competitors win more. For me to be able to do that as best as I can, then I think I need to compete so I can learn lessons there that can maybe translate into my training for them. So that's it. I still don't like it. I hate it less and less the more I do it. Of course, but
yeah.
It's the same thing also, you know, like the only way you get better at things you don't like doing, or the only way you like them or hate it less is just do it. Yeah, do it. It gets more comfortable. Never gets easy, but takes the edge off, I guess, a bit the more you do it. Yeah.
Huh. Get that. And do you feel like that's your, as a coach, right? And what you do, so you obviously work at Good Life and you work at the Coco's gym, you would say that your best skill set, because I find coaches always have these specific, very strong points in what they do. You find that Shane's best work is getting competitors to win more. And is that in any specific sport? It seems like it's quite broad and in that term, obviously, jiu-jitsu. It seems like you are targeting a lot of jiu-jitsu, but is there any specific kind of people that you're working with? It's just, I love working with people who love competition and want to win more.
Not necessarily. Yes, to a degree. jiu-jitsu, there's two things that I do mainly. It's jiu-jitsu and MMA fighters. Most of my MMA fighters are online, so you don't see them from a social media standpoint, because obviously the social media are things that I've taken videos with, so I'm with them face to face. So there's one who's keto that I do the MMA with, and then there's a few jiu-jitsu people. I'm just a bit of a perfectionist, I guess, and I've always liked projects and I like practical things. So any athlete, realistically, that wants to become better at what they're currently doing, to me that's fun. Because it's the little tiny little differences, things that can make a big difference with them. Fighting's fun. MMA fighters are fun because it's so complicated. There is so much going into that. They're always injured, same as jiu-jitsu people. From a jiu-jitsu standpoint, it's interesting because I get something else out of that, which is what I love, which is a couple of reasons I started jiu-jitsu in the first place is I'd recently come back from America, had friends and all these things because I come back home, but I wanted to create 2018,
okay.
Late 2018 or 2019. And I just wanted to add another community into my life. And, you know, as you know, jiu-jitsu is that massively. And the first jiu-jitsu practitioner that I coached that I hadn't met before completely online was Kim. And I remember going to the first competition that we were both at and seeing her there and then having this other person that I cared so much about how well she did made me realize how doing this just made that community of jiu-jitsu for me even bigger. So it's honestly that I really love. So there's a couple of things. It's with jiu-jitsu, because I'm so passionate about the sport itself, being able to help someone else that's also passionate at that sport become better at it is amazing. But that's not necessarily that it has to be a competitor. It can be anyone. Like, yeah. I've got a few people that I train now who doing jiu-jitsu now, they're not competing, but they're rolling and going to class every day, whereas when we started, they couldn't because they were coming back from a knee surgery or this, or they kept having a sore back all the time or whatever the thing is, and they've now got their passion back. So it's not necessarily that they have to be a good competitor or that competing is their thing. It's just me being out. If competing is their thing, then obviously that's fantastic. But if it's just getting on the mats more often, you know, being able to help someone do that, like, because I know how much that means to people. So, yeah. I don't know. There's so many amazing things. Like, man, I don't know, you probably saw this, but when I did the reel, I think, for it, but when at the Queensland States on the Sunday morning, when I woke up Sunday morning and I saw Misha's post about how amazing it was the day before when she'd competed in the finals against Kim, and before she went into the final, she was like, well, this is amazing because, you know, if I win, then I've won gold in the open weight, and if I lose, well, my good friend and training partner and amazing person has got gold. So either way, I've won. And I read that because I coached both of them. I literally started crying. Like, and it once again showed me how rewarding it made my job, how it makes my job. And then seeing Kim, Misha, Vinny, Rebecca, like everyone that I coached ended up getting gold medals. And, you know, what I did for them is minuscule compared to what they do on the mats, but just having any part in that success was so amazingly rewarding. And that's what I love about it, man.
Seeing other people's wins. Yeah, I like that.
And yeah, in this regard, they're winning because they're getting a medal. But like I said, there's also wins of just getting on the mats more often and feeling more confident. And just feeling stronger, even not just being on the mats. Like, this is the same as anyone that starts training. Success, you know? Yeah.
Just with all that, right? Just expanding. We talk about competition and you mentioned a few times about being on the mats more.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at individuals' training program, let's stay on jiu-jitsu for now. What are the things are you looking at? You know, what are the, you know, obviously the basic stuff, how many times per week, what are you willing to commit to, how much time you want to spend doing this, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to the actual movements, and obviously case-by-case scenario, of course, we're dealing with different injuries and whatnot, but what are some of the fundamentals of programming that you do when you work with MMA people, or in this case, jiu-jitsu people, to get them back on the mat more or
winning more? Okay, so yeah, away from obviously specific injuries and whatnot, it comes down to a couple. First of all, one question that gets asked is whether they've currently already training a lot in relation to weights, in which case I might edit their programming a little bit. But generally speaking, most people that come to me probably aren't training already. And if they are, it's very sporadic, or, you know, they've been doing the same thing and the same weight three times a week for the last 3 years. So as far as I'm concerned, they're basically not training because they're not creating any adaptations anyway.
Correct.
No stress, no adaptation. So everyone's effectively starting from scratch. So this is something I've been doing for a while, even with my face-to-face clients, that athletes or not, is everyone starts with a GPP phase, which is a general physical preparedness. And what I'm mainly trying to do with GPP is increase joint mobility and increase muscle endurance. Muscle endurance for me is probably the most important thing.
For that sport, at least, yeah.
Yeah, for sport, but for everything else. And I originally started doing it, from a sport perspective, because you look at jiu-jitsu as an example, you know, there's going to be injuries that occur, you know, because someone's legs caught the wrong way and someone moves really fast and the knee gets caught. And so those things are going to happen from time to time. But generally speaking, you have a sore back or neck or whatever, it's not that something specific has happened. It's probably that, you know, you're rolling for 5 minutes at a time. Your muscles aren't designed to work for that long, or they haven't been taught to work for that long and have that strength endurance. So what I want is for their muscles, then their strength endurance, to increase as much as possible so that they're always protected through the whole roll, or not to one roll, because, you know, you might do 10 in a class or whatever. So that comes a lot down to repetition work. So there's a lot of work with sleds, and I know you do a lot of work with sleds from a knee perspective. Same thing, but rather, so they actually do some backwards walking, because obviously the knee is one of their parts, and all the muscles that are related to that, one of the joints, an important joint of the body, irrelevant of whether you do jiu-jitsu or just life, right? But your back as well, your lats, your extensors, your spine, glutes. So it's a ton of work on the sleds, hitting all of the muscle groups, and teaching muscle endurance more than anything else. So what I do now is, and this only changed probably, a month or 6 weeks ago for everybody, is I've dropped it down to 3 days a week, particularly from an online perspective. If we're face-to-face, it's a bit different because I can auto-regulate with everyone. Or I can see, how are you feeling? Okay, we're going to change it up on the spot.
Touch, feel, smell.
Exactly. Yeah. But from an online perspective, that's different. So I've got to preempt what people are going to be feeling. So now what I do is they'll do 2 strength days a week and 1 mobility day a week. And that strength day to start with is a couple of weeks of a lot of sled work, a lot of repetition work. So they're increasing muscle endurance, but they're also increasing their aerobic capacity because they're working in specific heart rate zones. And because you're using a sled with TRXs or bands or something like that, they can actually get a lot more mobility happening with knees, hips, ankles and things. And that's most of what people are doing to start with. So, and even from a non-athlete standpoint, you know, if you don't have that muscle endurance, and I'm asking you to go and do a set of 10 squats, you know, you're probably not going to hurt yourself in the third squat. You'll hurt yourself in the 8th or 9th one. Yeah. If you do, you're probably not. But obviously, I want to mitigate that risk as much as possible. So if I can spend 2 weeks or a month increasing your strength endurance and your GPP before we get into the heavier weights or the more technical lifts, irrelevant of who you are, you're going to be get injured less. And at the end of the day, the best strength and conditioning program is the program that keeps you on the mats the most, or even if you don't, you know, like I said, do jiu-jitsu, you just want to go to the gym.
Yeah.
The more reps you do generally equals the more sessions you've done, which means you didn't get injured over the course of the year. And your body's then willing to take more brunt, so you can actually, when you get into the squats, do more weight anyway. So that's it now. So there's a GPP phase.
How long's the GPP phase for?
Face-to-face is average 4 weeks.
4 weeks, yeah. Online, what, 6?
It's 8 weeks online.
Yeah.
Generally, there'll be a it'll split into 2 phases, phase 1, phase 2. Phase 1 goes for 2 weeks face to face, and then phase 2 goes for 2 weeks, and then your 4 weeks is done. But I know you're probably going to be pushing yourself, you're going to be pushing yourself more with me. From an online perspective, you're just not quite going to be pushing yourself as much. People aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is we do that phase 1, phase 2, and then we flip back to phase 1 and phase 2 again. Which is, there's a lot of people, a lot of strength and conditioning coaches, particularly from a college standpoint in America, that do that with this specific GPP stuff as well. They flip-flop normally for about 9 weeks pre-season.
Yeah.
So I do it over an 8-week period. Once that's done, I'll probably get into what's called a condensed conjugate model. One of the things that I try to do from a strength conditioning standpoint is obviously build strength, but also build speed and power, because you know we need to be able to move quickly. It's important for sport, for jiu-jitsu, for whatever sport you play, but I really think it's important for life as well. So the condensed conjugate is pretty simple. There'll be a split 2 days a week, where 1 day will be, say, a dynamic upper body day and a heavy lower body day. So you're building up strength in the lower body and then speed in the upper body, and then flip it on the other day. So you dynamic lower body and then heavy upper body day. And then once again, that third day will be a mobility and recovery day. So that, depending on the individual, that might just be straight up mobility, or it might be mobility and sled work just to, increase blood flow. There you go.
Okay. I mean, that's really good. And I kind of already know this answer, and then I want to loop it back to the food that we touched on just at the start of the conversation. What do you think is, if you could take one piece of equipment or one movement that would keep you on the mats longer, or, you know, we've kind of briefly touched on that, which was longevity. What do you think that would be? If you could pick one thing, you
know what I mean? I have no idea what it would be. I actually had someone ask me this question this morning, a client who's actually, we're a month into his working with me now. We've basically been on the sled for a month. He comes for 45 minutes. He's just a health weight loss client. We've so far, we're down about 12 kilos or something like that in about 5 weeks. He's fitter, he's stronger. We're doing a lot of sled. And he said to me, this is it, if you only had one piece of equipment, it'd be a sled. I'm like, well, I love the sled because there's so many things I can do with it. You know, we can go light and go for days. So you got your conditioning standpoint, but we can go super heavy and build up strength. You can build up strength for the lower body. I don't know that you can build up strength that much for the upper body from a maximal strength perspective. But
I agree, yeah.
So I'm torn between two things. It's either they're a sled or a barbell with some weights, because I want to be able to build up upper body strength and full body strength. So with give me a barbell and a couple of plates, and I've got squats, deadlifts, bench press, and a lot of the Landmine University stuff that I'm doing at the moment as well, which is power generated by core rotation effectively. Yep. And that has such a transfer over into so many sports.
Absolutely.
So if I had to pick one, it would just be a barbell. Yep. 100%. But I'd hope you didn't make me pick one, and if I could pick two, it would be a sled and a barbell.
Yeah.
But because I can probably do a lot of the repetition work with a barbell.
Yeah.
And I can also build up maximal strength, and I think the combination of the two makes an all round athlete. So that's what I would probably go for.
So it shows you how little pieces of equipment that you can have to pretty much maintain or increase your strength, endurance, longevity as well.
Oh, man, 100%.
Mm.
Like, you know, when you're talking about athletes, it's one thing, you know, because, you know, they're competing against someone else that's probably doing work as well. And you know, that 1% difference can be the difference between winning or losing. But, you know, if you're just the average person and you just want to have a better life, man, the amount of things that you can do, just move. You know what I mean?
Movement.
Just move. Build some muscle. I mean, what was it, Andrew Huberman? I heard Andrew Huberman say a few weeks ago on a podcast that was, he had Andy Galpin on and was like, once you finish puberty and you become a fully grown adult, you've got to do a minimum of 5 sets of resistance exercise per muscle group just to not atrophy, for your muscles not to get smaller. And, you know, yeah, I just want to be a kick-ass 80-year-old.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to hurt when I bend over and pick stuff up. Yeah. I want to have muscles all the time. So, and moving through multiple patterns of movement through with resistance is effectively what I want to do there. Yeah, so give me a barbell and I can do everything.
Mm.
Yeah.
You mentioned about being 80, moving, you know, pain-free, well, to a certain degree there. At what point, and I want to go to this nutrition thing, but at what point did you kind of make that switch as far as, fuck, this is not about now, it's about how I'm going to be 80, 100, 120 years old. Like, was that an age thing for you, or was that you always had that seeing the end in mind? Like, and is this probably some of the challenges that, like, I definitely see that thinking about now, I don't think about, hey, I know this is hurting now, but imagine what you're going to be feeling like when you're 70 years old if you don't do anything about it. Like, yeah, what was that turning point, if there was one?
Joe Rogan.
Really?
Joe Rogan is the answer to that.
Yeah.
And sauna. So I think what happened is, when I was in the States, probably in 2018.
Yeah.
I came back from the States in 2019. So around 2018, I would finish up in the gym. And it was the first time that a gym I went to had a sauna or a steam room, actually, in this case. And I would just sit in a steam room and I'd be in there for 20 minutes and I'd be bored. So I'd started listening to a podcast. And I started listening to Joe Rogan.
He was big advocating on that. Still is. Yeah.
And then Joe has so many, such a different array of people through his podcast. And through listening to all that, I started learning enough about what the physical changes were happening to me. Because the reason I actually got addicted to exercise in the first place, I've always done exercise my whole life, but I'd, you know, run in the morning, I'd do some weights at night. It was sort of sporadic, like most people. But around 10 years ago, I started training in the mornings. And what really got me addicted to the weights was I would train in the morning and I would train my ass off. And then I would go home, get ready to go to work. And I would go to work in such a mood. Like, I would just felt amazing. I'd have all this energy. I was happy. And it was that mental space that it put me in for the day that really got me actually addicted to the gym. And I didn't know what was going on. I just knew that this happened.
Something
because it's how I felt, right? And then when I started hearing these podcasts, and I would hear people like Andrew Huberman, Rhonda Patrick.
She's big on heat.
She's big on heat, cold. Yeah, so many things. And I'd learn through these what was actually happening physically in my body. And then I would learn how that affects my longevity. And everything sort of just started clicking into place.
So you understand the why behind the things that you're doing. This is why I'm feeling X, Y, and Z.
And then I thought, well, now that I know this, I can do more as well. And then that just became a passion.
I love that. Going back to nutrition, just for a bit, and I've got another question here. Where do you think we're trying to keep this niche as much as we can, but again, as for the general public as well, where do you think people go wrong with nutrition? Do people overcomplicate it? You know, the things that I see, the most common thing is most people don't eat enough protein. Like, it's just 9, 8, 10, almost 10 out of 10 times they don't eat enough protein. That's probably like the most common challenge that I see. But where, in your experience so far as the coach and also working specifically a lot more with jiu-jitsu and MMA athletes, where do you think the common gaps you see when it comes to nutrition? And is it a mindset thing as well?
Mostly mindset.
Expand on that for me if you can.
Yeah, I will. I think for the majority of people, and there's going to be exceptions to this rule, but for the majority of people, I think they try to do too much in relation to, they've got an unhealthy diet, they're not really tracking their food, they're drinking on weekends, and I drink on weekends too, don't get me wrong, but there's, you know, they eat donuts, they eat cake, they drink on weekends, they don't eat breakfast, whatever. And there's usually a whole litany of things, right? If I have a new client and we have a look at their food, it's not one thing we've got to change.
It's multiple
things. It's multiple things. And I think the biggest problem is that people want to go from day one, they want to make all the changes at once. And then what happens is, when this happens with me, is if I try to make too much of a change, my brain will tell me this is too hard.
Of course.
And I will then fail because I just convince myself I'm going to fail. The other thing is, if I want to be perfect, well, the one time I have a freaking cookie, I've now failed, right? So the one thing that I do with most people now is I get them to pick 3 days where they'll just randomly, pick 3 days where they'll note all the things that they eat. Not necessarily calories and whatnot, but just take a note of everything they have. We'll catch up and we'll catch up after that. Sit down and have a look at it and just say, what out of these days do you not really need? Are you happy to not have? And just make small changes. And I find with most people, rather than me telling them what they should do, I ask them what they want to take out. And if it's only one little thing, then they can do that. And then they can see that change happening. That gives them confidence that they can do more change. I'm only talking 4 weeks later. They've now made a lot of changes. Exactly. But they're smaller changes that they've believed that they could do and they've agreed that they can do. Another question I like to ask people, and I heard this from Peter Attia, and he asks his clients the same thing. He sits down and says, right, well, this is the perfect scenario. You need to do this much exercise, this much food, blah, 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 blah. What do you think that you can do? And they say, well, I can do this much exercise and I can do this. And his next question is always, okay, well, how long can you commit to that for? And if their answer isn't forever, then they've got the wrong plan. If, you know, so one is they're trying to, pardon the pun, biting off more than they can chew. And then two, if they're an athlete, they're probably not eating enough.
That's, yeah, and one of the most common ones.
Yeah. So that twofold, one, they're not recovering, so they're always tired. And because they're always tired, their brains and their body's telling them that they need sugar because they're not eating enough carbs to fuel them. Assuming they're not keto or something, but most people aren't. So then they get these sugar cravings and they go and have a cracker or a biscuit or an ice cream or whatever. And it's a little bit of a sugar hit, but it's not the energy they really need. So generally speaking, they're not eating enough. And if I can usually add in some sort of higher carb, better timed carbs, then, and maybe, yeah, just a little bit more protein sometimes. And that's easy. Have to throw a shake in. Because the problem is if you train too much, the windows for eating are very small.
Correct.
That's my biggest problem personally. And I've had a couple of clients that, like, you know, they're training at jiu-jitsu. You're training till 8 o'clock at night. By the time you go home, you're too tired. So, and then number three would be preparation beats willpower. If you're not prepared, you will absolutely fail.
Mm.
Particularly if you're an athlete, because you're too damn tired when you finished your training.
Yeah.
You're not going to go and eat the right thing because you're too tired. So have your food made beforehand. Use a food company, which is what I do.
Which we discussed earlier in the conversation, yeah.
So just have something there that you can put in the microwave, because you know what? When you've just done an hour and a half's worth of rolls or wrestling or sparring or soccer practice or whatever it is that you do, and you get home and you've just had a big day at work, plus you did all that exercise, you're not going to cook. Like, come on, it ain't happening. So be honest with yourself and be prepared and have some meals ready to go. And that would be the trick.
I like that, yeah. A little bit of organization goes a long way.
Yeah, and that's the fuck it moment that one of my when I became a PT, my first PT manager, Jeff, he had the fuck it moment, which was, you know, this is not necessarily an athlete, but normal person, right? You know, you wake up in the morning, you've got kids, you've got to decide what you're doing for the kids. You're just making decisions all day long. You know, what am I going to do? Am I going to rouse at them to get them out of bed? Or am I going to let them go? Am I going to, you know, am I going to stop at this red light? I'm going to turn right. By the time you get to lunch, you've made 300 decisions. You don't notice it, but you have.
Mm-hmm.
You walk downstairs to the local cafe to get your lunch. You know you got to eat something healthy. You get down, you got to make another, what am I going to have? And it's just, oh, fuck it. I'll have the chips and gravy, thanks. Because you just...
Decision fatigue. Yeah.
Once again, just it's make the decision before the day starts.
Yeah, I did read something about this recently. It was about, you know, there's only so many good decisions that you can make per day. You mentioned, you kind of gave the best examples, like, oh, should I get the kids out of bed? I should have turned left. Should I turn right? What clothes should I wear? You know, all these unnecessary decisions that could have been, you know, decided that night before. And if we put that example with your training, you know, what am I going to eat tomorrow? What is that going to look like? What's my training? You know, you see people rock up to the gym, but they don't know what they're doing. They're like, oh, I might do this, and then I'll do this, and then oh, I'll do this. And that's the, yeah. I like all this stuff. Just one more thing I have here is, what do you think now? We talked about food. We've sort of talked about training. What are three actionable steps that you believe anyone can start taking today in order to improve muscle endurance, strength, maybe it's longevity? I mean, obviously, again, case-by-case scenario. However, yeah, what do you think, just to get you started, what are the first three things that anyone can start?
Number one, sleep. Like 100%, no questions asked. Get 8 hours sleep.
Yeah.
Or seven. Let's say seven to eight hours yeah. sleep. Most people don't.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the average of people?
Five or six, probably. That to me is number one. Because the body's just not recovering otherwise. And I mean, it does so many other things. To me, that's the absolute only thing that in my life is an absolute non-negotiable. Like, nothing gets in the way of my sleep.
How much sleep do you get?
I'm 8 hours. Eight hours.
And what's your routine before you go to bed?
My routine starts in the morning. I get up and I look at the sun.
I like that. It's a great answer, though. Yeah. Right? That's an awesome answer. Right?
I've always, man, since I was about 14 or 15 years old, I've been a horrendous sleeper. I remember, like, regularly, I would just be looking at the clock and I'd be like, what's the time? I'm sick. It's 2:30 in the morning. I'm still not asleep yet. You know, I've got to get up in 3 hours or like, I've had to have routines. So outside of the daytime stuff, all it is I'll try not to eat within a couple of hours of going to bed. However, that's not necessarily possible if I go to bed at 9 o'clock and I don't finish jiu-jitsu till 7. So I get home and I eat. But I'll eat as early as I can in that case. But I try not to eat for a couple of hours before bed.
How many hours?
About 2 hours.
2 hours.
Two hours. All the lights go off in my unit about 2 hours beforehand as well. Apart from, I've actually got three lights in my unit that are blue light free.
Yeah, beautiful.
I have a red light, which I don't really put on very often, but just, yeah, blue light free. So those lights will go on. And I have blue light blocking glasses that come on about an hour and a half before I go to bed. So I've got rid of all the light. I don't look at my phone or my computer. You know, I used to play computer games and things, so that's
how long just before you turn off screens? You know, so you don't touch your phone, your computer. When's that cutoff point for you? Is it 2 hours?
Seven o'clock. It's just 7 o'clock.
You're in bed by nine?
Bed by nine, yeah. Yep. So bed by nine, so 2 hours beforehand. I'll watch TV. Generally speaking, it might be the news or whatever, but it's something that isn't going to get me necessarily overly excited, you know, but it's on. But so there is blue light coming for that, but I've got my glasses on. Yep. So there's that. And then about 8:30, everything goes off and I read a book, which will be something, just some brain candy fantasy thing that, and I have it on an iPad. It's on night mode and I've got my blue light blocking glasses. So as far as my brain's concerned, it's black, right? Yep. And I just read that for half an hour. I used to read in bed. I've stopped doing that. And now I'll read on the couch because now, and this has probably been the last 6 months and actually has helped quite a bit, is the bedroom, it's sleep and sex and that's it. Like nothing else happens in there. Hmm. And then
you're associating the sleeping environment. I like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. And like even thought, like if I'm, and this happens from time to time, not very often anymore since I've made this change, but if I lay down in bed and my brain goes haywire, which used to happen regularly, now less and less, I'll get up out of bed and go and sit down somewhere else, you know, table, couch, whatever. And that's where the thinking happens. And then I'll go back to bed, teach my brain that that's just not the place for it. and a little gratitude journal nighttime entry at night, I've found probably the most helpful thing to calm my brain down before bed.
How many things that you write? It's gratitude. Some people say three, some people say five.
It's three for me. I mean, it makes no difference. For me, gratitude journaling is not about the gratitude. It's about the calmness in my mind that's required to think of something I'm grateful for.
Hmm.
If my mind is busy, I come up blank.
You can't think of anything that you're grateful for at that time.
It's the clarity, not clarity, sorry, but the quiet of the mind. And at night, so when I do it at night, it's not grateful because the gratitude thing happens in the morning. At night time, it's three things I could have done better today and three things that I did well today. And then that's it. And then I'll do that. It just takes a couple of minutes. And then I'll just set my timer on my phone for 4 minutes and just breathe. 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, focus on the breathing.
Yeah.
And then what usually happens in that 4 minutes is what used to happen when I would go to bed. My brain would start thinking of things. It's like I'm so busy all day long that what used to happen is you're so busy all day long, the brain's going, you're always thinking about doing things. As soon as I go lay down, as soon as my head hits the pillow, I'm like, oh, all right, time to sleep. And the brain's like, ha, gotcha, you bastard. I've been trying to tell you these things all day long. And so that's what happens. I sit down and it's not necessarily about being calm, but I guess it is during that calmness, like a thought will pop into my head and I'll either think, okay, good, happy with that. Or sometimes it needs more thought, or sometimes it needs looking into tomorrow. So I've got my pad that I just did my little entry in and I'll just jot that down to look at tomorrow. And then it basically just clears the mind and I can go to bed.
So once you go on paper, it's out of your mind.
Out of my mind.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So there is quite a bit of a routine there.
Yeah. There is. Yeah.
But, you know, I was bordering on insomniac for my whole life. Like, if I don't have these things, I don't know that I would sleep. Yeah. So.
Do you see how many people do? You mentioned about the average client that you work with, or the people that you come in contact with, is only about 5-6 hours sleep. By even implementing one of these strategies, such as maybe turning off the lights a couple of hours before bed, you know, can just have such a profound difference.
Yeah.
In your sleep.
I think it just even bigger than that is the simple. They learn how important it is, and they prioritize it. Mm. It's just the prioritizing the sleep that's the number one thing. It's appreciating and understanding how important it is, and making sleep the priority. In which case, you just go to bed, like you just have your routine. Like most people, don't need to put all those things in place. Get up in the morning. See some early morning sunlight, turn the lights down a couple of hours before bed, and try not to do things that get you too excited. You know, watching really exciting action movies or playing computer games that really get the brain going, cut them out and 90% of people are sleeping good. Mm. So that would be it. So there's that. One is sleep. Two is, if you can do, I would just say really simply sort of 2 to 3 hours of zone two training. So that's just some sort of steady state cardio, like running, rowing, things like that, where your heart rate is basically 180 minus your age. It's way more scientific than that.
Of course.
But the simple thing is 180 minus your age to get a feel of what it's supposed to be like. You should be able to have a conversation if you need to, but not really want to, because it would be uncomfortable.
Challenging but doable.
Yeah, you could be able to do it for hours, but you know, do it for half an hour, 45 minutes, 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
And the amount of benefits that'll do from a health standpoint is crazy. And then the other one would be probably three or four strength sessions a week. They don't have to be over the top, but back to what I said earlier, you know, 5 sets of exercise per muscle group per week is a minimum required not to lose muscle mass as we age. Mm. So if that's your minimum, plus you do a bit of the running, if you don't already run and it's hard for you, just make it a walk. Like, to get 140 beats a minute for an average 40-year-old that doesn't exercise, it's just a fast walk on the beach. Or it doesn't have to be the beach, it's just a fast walk.
Fast walk, yeah.
So just do that. Have those three things: sleep, some resistance exercise, which doesn't even have to be squats and weights and stuff. It's a big push-up, body weight stuff. You know, start wherever you need to. And then, yeah, 2 to 3 hours of some sort of cardio. And if you're not sure how to do any of that, get a coach.
Yeah. And where do people find you if they need a coach?
If they need a coach, mm-hmm. Probably the easiest thing is just go to Instagram, Shane Warne_fitness. And that's me.
I'll put that in the description.
Yeah.
Any other platforms, or you just mainly using Instagram?
Oh, mostly, let's just say mostly Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, dude.